in the prophecy of Daniel. Daniel chapter 1. Daniel chapter 1, verse 1, hear now the inerrant, infallible, and inspired word of God. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem, and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar, to the house of his God, and he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. And the king spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel, and of the king's seed, and of the princes, children in whom was no blemish, but well favored and skillful in all wisdom and cunning and knowledge, and understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and tongue of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat, and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. Now among these were the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, unto whom the princes of the eunuchs gave names. For he gave unto Daniel the name of Belteshazzar, and to Hananiah of Shadrach, and to Mishael of Meshach, and to Azariah of Abednego. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. And the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who hath appointed your meat and your drink. For why should he see your faces worse liking than the children which are of your sort? Then shall ye make me endanger my head to the king. Then said Daniel to Melzar, whom the prince of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days. And let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink. Then let our countenances be looked upon before thee, and the countenance of the children that eat of the portion of the king's meat, and as thou seest, deal with thy servants. So he consented to them in this matter, and proved them 10 days. And at the end of 10 days their countenances appeared fairer and fatter in flesh than all the children which did eat of the portions of the king's meat. Thus Melzar took away the portion of their meat and the wine that they should drink, and gave them pulse. As for these 4 children, God gave them knowledge in skill and in all learning and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now in the end of the days that the king had said that he should bring them in, then the prince of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. And the king communed with them, and among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in all his realm. And Daniel continued even unto the first year of King Cyrus. May God add his blessing to the reading and to the hearing of his most holy word. Let's introduce the book. It's always important that we introduce, because introductory studies have, or can have, a profound influence on how we interpret any particular book of the Bible. So the author, the prophet Daniel. There is not a lot known about Daniel, but there are a couple of things. Notice he was of certain of the children of Israel. Potentially he was of the king's seed, or perhaps of the prince's seed. He was someone in whom was no blemish, well-favored, skillful in all wisdom, cunning in knowledge, able to understand science, that is knowledge, science, and able to stand in the king's palace. And also he was able to learn the Chaldean tongue. So, remember, at the dating of this book, we date it from the prophet Daniel from that time before Jerusalem fell to Nebuchadnezzar. Remember that there were a total of three waves. The first wave of captivity, the cream of the crop was taken. The second wave, there was another set of folks taken, and the king. And then finally, when Zedekiah had rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar, he surrounded the city. Zedekiah finally left when the city was broken through. He was captured. His eyes were put out. He was taken to Babylon. And then the city itself was taken down in 586 B.C. So we date the book then with the prophet Daniel sometime around 597, 596 B.C. Sometime then around 10 years or 11 years before the fall of Jerusalem itself. Okay? Nebuchadnezzar did what many of foreign kings did when they came in and conquered another country. They took the cream of the crop to be their own advisors. Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, these young men are the cream of the crop. They have young, bright, and dedicated minds. They are probably somewhere between 16 and 21 years of age. They are young adults or late teens, if you will. They are somewhere in that neighborhood of with regard to their age. So the date of writing, we're at about 597 B.C. at the beginning. Of course, the prophecy spans about 70 years. So we have the high points of 70 years of history written by the prophet Daniel in the book of Daniel through 12 chapters. The purpose of the prophecy, I think, is twofold. And if you're familiar with the book of Daniel, I think you will recognize these two prominent themes that come up over and again in the book. The first theme is that God is a God of knowledge and revelation. The God of Daniel is a God of knowledge and revelation. Or as Francis Schaeffer said, 2,500 years after the days of Daniel, he is there and he is not silent, right? He is a God who speaks. He is a God who reveals. And over again, we will see Daniel saying, there is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets. Therefore, I will make known the interpretation of the king, and so on. The second theme that runs through the book of Daniel, or the second purpose of the book of Daniel, is that that God who reveals has revealed one very special thing about himself. And that is that he sets up kings and throws them down at his pleasure. At his pleasure. So he rules in the affairs of men. Not only is he a God of knowledge, not only is he the God of knowledge. In other words, there is no knowledge, no secret apart from him, because his voice is creative of the truth. And so knowledge ascribes to him. Knowledge adheres or inheres with him. But also, as a part of that knowledge, he is revealed that the kingdoms of this earth are not left to spin out on their own. He sets up kings and he takes them down at his pleasure. An outline of the book, you know how I am. I like to simplify outlines, not magnify them so you can't remember them. Remember, what is the book of Isaiah? Book of judgment, book of comfort, right? What is the book of Ezekiel? The glory departs, the glory returns. See, that's something someone like me can remember. I hope you can remember stuff like that too. Okay? Chapters 1 through 6 of the book of Daniel, God moving in the affairs of men now. Chapters 7 through 12, God moving in the affairs of men after now. Huh? Can we get that? That's right. After now. Right? So that even now he is setting up kings and taking them down at his pleasure. But then in chapter 7 through the end, we begin those long and grand visions of Daniel, where Daniel says that God will do what? He'll rule in the affairs of men later also, not just now. Okay? So, there's a There's a brief outline and introduction to the book of Daniel. If you're looking for greater or further literature to read on the book of Daniel, I would recommend two books for introductory work, and these are the same books that I recommend for Old Testament introduction on every book of the Bible. The first is Edward Joseph Young, Dr. E.J. Young, Introduction to the Old Testament. And the second is Survey of the Old Testament Introduction by Gleason L. Archer. And then if you're really wanting a good commentary on the book of Daniel, one that is both pastoral, that has some good uses in it, and also one that gets right down on the text and makes some really good use of it, I would recommend, once again, Edward Joseph Young, E.J. Young, his commentary on Daniel. And I would also recommend Kyle and Dalich. Kyle and Dalich is generally a very reliable commentary in the book of Daniel, especially good. So, if for further study, then you can take those up. All right, so here we are then in verse 1. Notice the time of the writing. We are in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah. Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. Notice that we start with a little bit of history before the writing, before Daniel begins to write. He talks about why he is in Babylon. What's he doing there? How come you, the prophet of God, Daniel, are now in Babylon? Okay, so Daniel is telling that story. So the king is taken, the vessels are taken out of the house of God and placed in the house of Nebuchadnezzar's God. We will hear about those vessels later, won't we? Then the plan for the captives is revealed. The plan for the captives is revealed. They are the best of the best, the cream of the crop. They are the brightest, well-favored. They're skillful in their intelligence. They are well-favored in appearance. And they are to be trained for 3 years that they might be of service to the king. Notice, they are to be trained for 3 years. What is this training process? What do you think it is? Well, think with me. If you're Nebuchadnezzar, if you're Melzar, if you're the Ashpenaz, and you have the best and the brightest of a foreign land coming into your country, and you want them to be of service to your king, what are you going to do for 3 years? You're going to indoctrinate them in your own culture. You're going to sweep them into your own culture and wipe out all remnants of Hebrew culture so that they can become the best and brightest of your nation rather than of a foreign nation. And so in service to that, the first thing that they do is what? That's right, they change their names. They give them Chaldean names. Now the reason to change the name is just like God told Adam at the very beginning, I want you as the one to whom I have given dominion over the earth to name the animals. You name them because you're their ruler. Same thing here. You are no longer Hebrew citizens ruled by a Hebrew king. You are ruled by Nebuchadnezzar, who has, in service of his reign over you, given you all new names. So Daniel's name, which means the Lord shall judge, now is called Belteshazzar, which is may Balak protect. Azariah, the Lord has helped, is now Abednego, which means the servant of Nebo. Mishael is who is like unto God, or who is what God is. Mishael is now Meshach, which is who is what Aku is. And Aku is a Babylonian deity. And Hananiah, which means the Lord is gracious, right? Chen, right? The Hebrew word chen for grace. Now his name is Shadrach. So he now lives under the command of Aku. How would you like that? If a foreign, an occupying nation came and gave each one of you a name that pertained to their false gods. But that's what happened. That's what happened. They named them according to their rule, their own reign, and according to their own worship. And they put them in training for 3 years. Can we say an indoctrination for 3 years? So that they might be of service. All right, verse 8. interestingly, fascinatingly, and heroically, Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore, he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Daniel purposed in his heart. Brothers and sisters, what is the purpose of your heart? What a great way to say that. What a great way for the Spirit to inspire the prophet Daniel to speak thus about himself. Daniel purposed in his heart that he would what? Well, literally, according to the passage, not be defiled with the king's meat. You know what that is, right? We call that metonymy. That's putting a part for the whole. Not to be defiled with the king's meat is not to be indoctrinated into Babylonian worship and culture. Daniel purposed to remain faithful to Yahweh. Now, this 3 years' time that they were supposed to be trained was that they were also supposed to eat of the food that the Babylonian elite ate of, which was meat that was sacrificed to idols. Daniel said no. Not only was it unclean, but it was unclean by reason of association with idolatry. And so Daniel said no. Not only to the food, the meat, but also to the wine. No. No. That represents a weakening of the purpose. And the purpose is what? To live as servants of Yahweh in an occupied, a foreign land. And so that's what Daniel did. He maintained his separated existence. Now that's commendable enough in and of itself. But can I take it a step farther? Because the text does. Notice what Daniel does. Not only does he maintain his separated existence, but he does so in such a way. By the way, maintaining a separated existence is somewhat rare, but not that rare. But the next step is very rare. Daniel maintains his separated existence in such a way that he is favored by his captors. He's favored by his captors. What is so interesting about this is that Daniel has not insulated or isolated himself in such a way that when his captors think of him, they think of him as, oh man, I need to go ask Daniel a question. I know I'm going to suffer for it. I know I'm going to get chewed out. I know I'm going to get a lecture. I know I'm going to get, there's no king but Jesus now. You can't make me do that. Instead, the Lord had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. Now, do you think that's contrary to the way Daniel has been acting or commensurate with the way Daniel has been acting? Of course, to ask the question is to answer it. It's a rhetorical question. And so we note Daniel's procedure here. The first thing he does is he says, this stuff, it's defiled. We can't eat it. We can't accept that worldview. We can't do that. Help me out here. He doesn't go on a hunger strike. He doesn't stamp his foot and jump up and down and insist and stand on, you know, no king but Jesus. You can't make me. And we hear a lot of that these days. Instead, what he does is he works within the parameters of those who are holding him captive. He negotiates with them. He gives them the honor that is their due. Because let me remind us all of something here. Who put them in charge of Daniel? God did. And so Daniel, in recognition of that fact, works within those parameters of God's providential dealings with him and the perceptive understanding that he has from understanding that they are there for their own sins. And so Daniel humbly beseeches the prince of the eunuchs that he should not have to defile himself, that he might keep that purpose which he's purposed in his heart. And so he does so by way of entreaty. He does so by way of negotiation. And he gives the man that is over him a way to help him. He gives him a way to help him. Brothers and sisters, this is quite commendable. This is how we ought to behave ourselves with those who are in authority over us that disagree with us. We ought not to make ourselves a thorn in their sides. We ought to be such good, in this sense, captives, that the Lord brings us into tender love and favor with those whom we serve, even though they are unbelievers. And we ought to do it in such a way that when we cannot cross a line, that we ask them for help and they would be willing to help. And so Daniel offers a proposition. Prove us 10 days. Notice Daniel's great confidence in the Lord. Feed us pulse. Pulse is just another Hebrew word for something that grows from seeds. A vegetable, perhaps a fruit. It's not any particularly, if we could just find out what that was, our countenances too could be fatter flesh. Oh yeah. No, it's not what it's all about at all. It has nothing to do with learning to be vegetarians. Nothing to do with, if you stay away from the meat and the wine, you'll be more healthy. Nothing to do with that. And everything to do with God showing favor in a way that was extraordinary. So that at the end of 10 days, Daniel and his friends' countenances were fatter of flesh. They looked more healthy than the others did because God was increasing their favor in the land of Babylon. This is not about being a vegetarian and everything about purposing in your heart to live a life dedicated to Yahweh and His commandments. And so this is what happens. And so, not only does the prince of the eunuchs say, wow, this is great. Notice, by the way, that there were other children there. And what were they doing? What were they eating? Whatever they fed them. And so some of those that came with Daniel out of the captivity didn't have that same purpose, did they? They gave themselves the excuse that many people often give themselves. I'm in captivity. This is an extreme circumstance. Surely God will not judge me for feeding what I'm given. I can't starve to death after all. And notice the contrast between that procedure and Daniel's procedure. Brothers and sisters, many times, like James says, we have not because we ask not. What did Daniel do? He had the purpose and the courage and the dedication to living as a servant of Yahweh that he asked. Isn't it possible? Isn't it likely that many times we simply pass by without asking because we think we already know the answer? Daniel didn't presume. He asked. He asked out of dedication. And so the next time that your employer asks you to do something that you think might be questionable, it gives you a rise in your conscience. Remember, you have not because you ask not. Bring yourself into tender favor with those who are over you in authority by good and exemplary behavior at all times, such that when something comes up like this, you'll have a little bit of history, a little bit of context. And then, don't be afraid to ask the question. Don't be afraid to ask. You may be surprised. Wasn't Abraham surprised when he said, surely the fear of God is not in this place? Sarah, you better tell him you're my sister. A little bit later on, he found out, you know what? The fear of God was in that place. And it would have been fine had he just come out with it at the front. You have not because you ask not. All right, so then the chapter ends. And notice that we are continuing in here in chapter 1 to call them not by their Babylonian names, but by their Hebrew names because of their purpose. And so in all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in all his realm. The word magician there simply means wise man. It's the same word. It's a derivative of that word that we see in Greek when the magi come looking for the Christ. All right. And by the way, thus we believe that the magi learned about Christ from Daniel. From Daniel. And 500 and something years later, they came looking for him. So, Daniel continued then even unto the first year of Cyrus. Cyrus, all the way down. 70 years after 586 BC, where Cyrus makes the decree for the Jews to go back and to rebuild, Daniel is still ministering in the court of Babylon. Thus ends the reading then of Daniel chapter 1. Let's stand and continue praising God in the singing of psalms. Turn with me.